ACT Radio is taped and produced at the KTEP studios at the University of Texas at El Paso. The views and opinions expressed on ACT Radio are solely those of its participants and do not necessarily reflect those of KTEP, its staff, or management.
Welcome to ACT Radio, Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson.
And I'm Liz Walsh.
Here on ACT, we discuss how we humans relate to other animals.
How we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
We also discuss why a plant-based diet is the best thing one can do, not only for one's health, but for the environment.
So if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, if you're concerned about your health, or you're concerned about the environment, stay tuned for Animal Concerns of Texas.
Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with Natalie Prosen, the executive director of the Non-Human Rights Project. That's coming up a little later, but first some news.
All beef sales have been banned in the Indian state of Maharashtra after President Mukherjee signed a Maharashtra Animal Preservation Bill. It's been pending since 1995. A rule restricting the sale and possession of beef has been extended to include the slaughter of bulls and bullocks previously allowed through a fit-for-slaughter certification. Those breaking the law can expect to be jailed for 5 years and fined 10,000 rupees. According to the state finance minister, they have been trying hard for the last several years to get the bill passed into a law. It not only ensures that animals are not killed, but it also stabilizes the agricultural situation. Prevention of the killing of animals will increase the productivity of farms. Even healthy animals were being killed for money, but it will stop now. Not everyone in the state was happy with the new law. The president of the Mumbai Suburban Beef Dealers Association said the new law will render people jobless and the prices of other meat products will increase further. As per an estimate, Mumbai alone consumes nearly 9,000 kilograms of mutton every day, sold through 900 licensed stalls and an equal number of illegal stalls. Hopefully, this will curb the consumption of beef in India.
Drinking 3 or more glasses of milk per day may be harmful to one's health, according to a new study. Women in the study who downed at least 3 glasses of milk a day were nearly twice as likely to die over the next 20 years compared with their peers who drank less than a glass daily, researchers in Sweden found. In addition, the study found that women's risk of bone fracture climbed steadily as their milk intake increased. The culprit could be galactose, a simple sugar found in milk, said Carl Michelson, a professor at Uppsala University in Sweden and one of the study's authors. Michelson said that galactose might induce oxidative stress and low-grade inflammation, the type of inflammation that can affect mortality and fractures. The U.S. Department of Agriculture recommends that adults get the equivalent of 3 cups of milk daily, based on the idea that milk is good for the bones and may reduce heart disease risk. But there's actually little scientific evidence to support these recommendations, the study author said. The Swedish study included over 60,000 women who were ages 39 to 74 at the study's start, and over 45,000 men ages 45 to 79, and the findings were published in the British Medical Journal. The women were followed for 20 years on average. The researchers found that women who drank 3 or more glasses of milk daily were twice as likely to die during the follow-up period than those who drank less than a glass of milk daily. The risk of death during the 20-year period rose by 15% with each glass of milk consumed, the researchers found. They also found that higher milk consumption was linked with an increased likelihood of fractures.
The Center for Biological Diversity reports that in an effort to protect the critically endangered vaquita porpoise, the government of Mexico recently proposed a 2-year ban on the use of gill nets in the northern Gulf of California. The vaquita is found nowhere else in the world and has been driven to near extinction as a result of drowning in fishing nets. Scientists predict that the vaquita, which numbers fewer than 100 individuals, could be extinct by 2018 if drastic and immediate action is not taken. While Mexico's gill net ban is an important step forward in vaquita conservation, it will be unlikely to prevent extinction of the species unless there is a lasting commitment to rigorous enforcement to stop illegal fishing. Previous similar announcements by Mexico have gone largely unenforced and have failed to stem the decline of the species. The two-year ban, which is expected to begin in early April, is also not sufficient time to allow the vaquita to recover. According to the Center for Biological Diversity's Brendan Cummings, the vaquita is in need of urgent action to prevent its extinction. And while we're pleased that Mexico is finally moving forward with a long-overdue gillnet ban, there are few indications the government officials will see that is actually implemented or maintained. For more than two decades, scientists have been urging a reduction in the use of gillnets in vaquita habitats, which kill the animals after they get entangled in the fishing gear. The new ban targets legal shrimp fisheries, which export their product to the United States, and illegal totoaba fishing, which supplies swim bladders to China as an ingredient in a medicinal soup. Both fisheries have devastated vaquita, with half of the remaining population disappearing in the last 3 years. The ban announcement came in response to growing international attention and outrage over the plight of the vaquita, including calls for trade sanctions against Mexico and a possible boycott of Mexican shrimp.
Just a couple of days ago, Ringling Brothers announced that they were going to phase out the use of elephants in their circuses. This comes after years of protest at every venue they attended and a number of violations slapped on them by the USDA's Animal Welfare Division. But they still plan to enslave dogs and tigers and lions and camels. Stay with us. Coming up next on ACT Radio, we feature a conversation with Natalie Prosen, the executive director of the Non-Human Rights Project, an organization which seeks legal rights for certain animals. That's coming up next on ACT Radio. Recent years have seen an intensifying effort on the part of animal rights activists, legislators, and lawyers to change the way the law treats animals. Joining us now on ACT Radio is Natalie Prosen, Executive Director of the Non-Human Rights Project. Thanks for being with us on the show, Natalie.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Natalie, can we start out by having you tell our listeners how you got involved in animal issues?
Sure. Well, I have been with the Non-Human Rights Project almost 6 years, but my interest in animal issues really goes back to my childhood days. And, I think I'll take this time right now to talk about Ringling Brothers and how that has impacted my activism in animal welfare issues. So as I'm sure a lot of your listeners know, a few days ago, Ringling Brothers announced that it would be ending its Elephant Circus Act. And I remember very poignantly, as a child, watching the Disney movie Dumbo and being really moved by the story of using elephants in circuses.
I wonder how many of us were affected by Disney when we were young.
Right, whether it was Bambi or Dumbo. Exactly. as young as I can remember, I've always been interested in animal issues. And it really wasn't until I was in graduate school that I started thinking about, the way we currently treat animals, whether it's for food or entertainment. And I really thought that this was kind of the greatest injustice that my generation had the opportunity and capability to change. And that is why I sought out the degrees that I did and am now working with the Non-Human Rights Project.
It's really great that Ringling Brothers has decided to phase out the use of elephants in their circuses, but they're still going to keep using other animals like lions and tigers and camels.
Right. I think this is a major step forward.
Yeah, it is.
For Ringling Brothers to announce that it will no longer use elephants in their circus acts. But I really hope that they soon recognize that they shouldn't be using any animals in their circus acts, and I also hope that other circuses will follow in the footsteps of Ringling and retire their elephants and other animals.
That's true, but it's much easier to abuse animals than it is to compete with Cirque du Soleil.
Well, Natalie, can you tell us a little bit about the Non-Human Rights Project?
Sure. The Non-Human Rights Project was formed by attorney Stephen M. Wise, and what we have set set out to do is change the way that non-human animals are seen under the U.S. legal system. And I should just give some background, because I'm sure some of your listeners may not know, but all non-human animals in our legal system and everywhere in the world are seen as legal things. And we're trying to change that. So essentially, every non-human animal is treated as a piece of property under our U.S. legal system. And there may be animal welfare laws and anti-cruelty laws that give some sort of protection to these animals, but no non-human animal has any rights at all. In fact, the only animal that has any legal rights is the human animal. And so what we set out to do is change the legal system so that at least some non-human animals have very basic fundamental legal rights. So we're focusing on the most cognitively complex species of animals. So all four species of great apes, which include chimpanzees, bonobos, gorillas, and orangutans, as well as elephants and cetaceans, so dolphins and orcas and beluga whales. And we're trying to change their status from what we call legal thinghood to legal person. Now, this is where people start getting a little confused and think that I'm talking about making them human beings.
We're giving them human rights.
Or giving them human rights, exactly. But that's not what we're doing. So legal person isn't a synonym for human being. It's not even a biological concept. And as some of your listeners may know, corporations
right.
are considered legal persons.
And some ships?
Exactly. Ships in the country of India. A Hindu idol has been granted legal personhood status. A mosque has been granted legal personhood status, and even in New Zealand, a river has been granted legal personhood status. So what we're trying to do, and what we've set out to do in our first cases that I can talk about in a moment, is have a court declare our plaintiffs or petitioners legal persons with the fundamental right to bodily liberty. So we're asking for one legal right for our plaintiffs.
Well, Natalie, in the past, in other countries, animals did have rights. Isn't that correct?
That is not true, actually. And that's really kind of a misunderstanding of what's happened in other countries. So, for instance, there's usually people say, well, don't dolphins have rights in India? Haven't they been declared legal persons? And, in fact, they have not been declared legal persons.
Well, what happened?
Yeah, so what happened was...
yeah, we had the misunderstanding, obviously.
in India, the agency, the environmental agency that oversees marine circuses, so places like SeaWorld or the equivalent of SeaWorld in India, this agency, this governmental agency, said that they would no longer allow for the use of dolphins in these marine parks. But in their decision, they said, some scientists want us to even go as far as declare them legal persons, but they never declared them legal persons. They just quoted scientists that had offered up that suggestion.
Wow.
I don't remember, like, in the 1800s or 1700s in Europe, like, animals could actually sue humans.
You know, I don't know specifically about that, but there were in kind of the medieval times,
yeah.
we used to put animals on trial
right.
for killing humans or killing other animals. But that was kind of a strange time in history in which, at the time, we believed that the devil was inside the animal. So it was really a strange time, but they weren't giving the animal itself any legal rights.
Right. Okay. Interesting. So tell us a little bit about the cases that you're focusing on.
Sure. So it took us 7 years to develop these cases. We did a lot of research and strategizing about which jurisdictions to file our first lawsuits in. And we ultimately chose New York State to begin with. And in December 2013, we filed three cases in New York State on behalf of four chimpanzees. And we are asking the New York courts to declare these chimpanzee petitioners legal persons with the fundamental right to bodily liberty so that they can ultimately be transferred to sanctuaries that more appropriately meet what a chimpanzee needs. And I can tell you a little bit about our plaintiffs right now so you guys have an idea of what conditions they're in. So our first plaintiff is Tommy, and Tommy is a chimpanzee who is living in basically solitary confinement. There are no other chimpanzee companions with him, actually no other non-human animal companions with him, and he is living in a cage in a shed on a used trailer lot. And then there's Kiko, who's in his mid-20s, and he is a chimpanzee living in somebody's home in Niagara Falls. And then there's Hercules and Leo, who are two chimpanzees being used in biomedical research at SUNY Stony Brook University.
It sounds like a very sad situation for these animals. And how did you select these particular individuals? It sounds like you chose some that were being used from the pet trade and then some from scientific research.
And entertainment.
And entertainment, I guess.
Exactly, exactly. So first we chose the jurisdiction. It was really important that we chose the jurisdiction where we had the best shot at winning our first cases. So once we chose New York, we said, okay, well, who's in New York? And we canvassed the state to see what sort of non-human animals that fit our criteria were in the state. And we discovered these four chimpanzees. And those are the only chimpanzees that we know of in New York State. So we ended up filing on behalf of all of the chimpanzees we could find.
As I understand it, three of them have died?
So originally we had chose two chimpanzees that were living in a roadside zoo in upstate New York. And as we were preparing our case, unfortunately, they died. And so it was at that kind of juncture that we decided, you know, if there's a real danger here that chimpanzees are dying in New York and we need to get to them. So we decided to find all the chimpanzees in New York, and we found five. So as we were preparing our cases, one of the five died before we could file our lawsuit, so now we've been left with four. But I think this is a really, you know, compelling point that shows that, you know, chimpanzees, you know, it's kind of a state of emergency for these chimpanzees in New York, and we really need to get them legal rights so that they can get out of there and into sanctuaries.
The case of Tommy, who lives in a cage in a shed, caught at least nationwide attention when you guys brought the case before the courts. Can you tell us the status?
So our cases are at different levels right now. So in Tommy's case, we have gone through the trial court level and the intermediate appellate court level. And we have now filed a motion for leave to appeal to the state's highest court in New York to hear our case.
And how does it look? Does it look promising, or what's your outlook for Tommy?
Well, we are hopeful that the Court of Appeals in New York, which is New York's highest court, will hear our case and hear the arguments as to why we believe that Tommy is a legal person and why he should have the fundamental basic right to bodily liberty. And we're hopeful that our arguments are strong enough that the bench agrees with us.
I was just wondering about Tommy's legal team. What are they claiming, that he's property of these people that own him?
Right. So it's interesting because Tommy's owners, and I'll use owners in quotation marks, have hired an attorney, but they've never filed anything in our cases. They have never filed a brief. So we don't really know what their arguments are, but we can venture a guess to think that, you know, because Tommy is considered property and is owned by his owners, that they think they're doing everything perfectly legally. And we're actually not arguing that they're violating any sort of animal welfare statute. I mean, that's exactly the point of our cases, is that we don't believe they are in violation of any animal welfare anti-cruelty statute. But the reason that they can keep them in these conditions is because they don't have any legal rights. And so that's what we're trying to change.
Okay, so they're providing food, water,
right, so
shelter,
exactly.
So they can't be accused of any kind of illegal activity, although they have this poor creature confined in a very small cage in isolation, basically.
Right, and that's perfectly legal. And for such self-aware, self-determining non-human animals, we don't believe that they should be recognized as property anymore, and that these aren't the places that they should be living.
This will have enormous impact if the case is found in Tommy's favor. It'll change the whole legal system as it regards animals.
Yes, and that is why we were so careful in choosing these jurisdictions, is because we wanted the best shot at winning, because this will have reverberations for other great apes and other cognitively complex species of animals, hopefully in other states as well. It'll certainly act as persuasive authority.
You guys did invest a huge amount in time choosing the jurisdiction and preparing for the case, so it sounds like you've done a very good job of getting everything lined up for success. So all we could do is hope that the judge that rules is persuaded by the evidence that you put forward that indeed these animals are worthy of having rights.
Exactly. I should also mention that besides our legal arguments, you know, we spent a great deal of time developing our scientific arguments that we offered up in these cases. So we filed 9 affidavits from 9 of the world's leading chimpanzee experts in the field, and they were able to talk about their research and display the enormous cognitive complexities of these chimpanzees. And so we're kind of marrying the science with our legal arguments to prove that these non-human animals deserve legal rights.
And I saw that Jane Goodell is one of your board members, so that's really great.
Yes, she is a board member. That is correct.
Are you developing other cases for other animals at this time?
Yes, we are currently developing a case on behalf of one or more elephants that we hope to file by the end of the year. And we're not announcing where we'll be filing this lawsuit because it's really to protect our plaintiff petitioners so that in case, you know, the owners get a wind of this, they don't go hide them. Well, although it's very hard to hide an elephant, you can certainly hide a chimpanzee. But it's mostly for the safety of our plaintiffs so that they're not moved out of state or sold or, you know,
put on Craigslist.
God forbid something worse. Exactly.
Yeah, that was something that really surprised me is one time I got on Craigslist because I had found a stray dog, and I couldn't believe the trade in animals just in our city alone. It's like incredible.
Yeah, very unfortunate.
So after New York, then are you going to move on to different states to try to get them to adopt similar laws?
Well, you know, it depends. We may stay in New York or we may go on to another state. It really depends on, we've kind of identified the top 5 states for the types of lawsuits that we're filing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it depends on who's actually in those states. So, you know, some of these states may not actually have any of our non-human animal plaintiffs, whether they're great apes, elephants, or cetaceans. And so then that poses a problem. Can we try to figure out if anybody's going to be coming into the state, whether it's a circus or any sort of traveling act? So, you know, there's a lot involved in determining what our next move will be.
Well, on your webpage, you do have a state-by-state map that you can click on and find out what's going on in your particular state. So I clicked on Texas, and it seems like we have some issues here in our state.
Yeah.
We're probably
not on your list of states where you stand any likelihood of protecting animals.
Well, at least for the types of cases that we're filing, Texas certainly isn't one of our top states in bringing the habeas corpus legal personhood lawsuits that we're bringing.
Explain how you're using habeas corpus as a tool in your cases.
Right. So habeas corpus, we're using what's this kind of ancient, funny sounding, what's known as a cause of action to get into the courthouse doors. And that's called a writ of habeas corpus. And this is a really ancient writ that allows a third party, so us in this case, the Non-Human Rights Project, to file a lawsuit on behalf of somebody that's being detained or held in captivity. So usually what's happened throughout the course of human history is habeas corpus has been used by a third party to bring a lawsuit on behalf of somebody that's being held captive, usually by a sheriff. And it requires that the captor bring the detainee into court to speak to why they are detaining that person, because usually the third party or the detainee believes that they're being held unjustly. So some of your listeners or you guys might even be familiar with the use of habeas corpus in the Guantanamo cases. So that's mm-hmm. probably the most familiar to people, that habeas corpus has been used by Guantanamo prisoners to get them to question whether or not they're being detained legally. So we're using that cause of action to require the court to look into the captivity or the detention of these chimpanzees and question whether or not it actually is legal or not. And we're arguing, obviously, that it's illegal to be detaining these chimpanzees.
Natalie, can you tell us where our listeners can go to find out more about your organization, the Non-Human Rights Project?
Yes, we have a website, nonhumanrights.org, and we're also very active on Facebook, Non-Human Rights Project, and Twitter, which is at Non-Human Rights. And we keep our supporters updated every step of the way, and people can go on our website or our social media platforms to learn more about our cases and what it is that we're doing. There's a whole lot to learn, so it's quite complex, but I think people might enjoy perusing our court documents in particular.
Thanks, Natalie. It's really a great project that you're doing, and like Greg said earlier, it really has the potential to revolutionize how we treat animals in the United States, and we certainly hope that you're successful, and best wishes in all of these cases.
Oh, thank you very much. It was a pleasure speaking with you guys.
We've been talking with Natalie Prosen, the executive director of the Non-Human Rights Project. We thank you very much for joining us on the show.
Thank you very much.
You might like to attend a showing at Hal Marcus Gallery, which starts on March 26th and runs through May 22nd, called All You Can Eat, which is an art show based on a vegetarian theme. The Hal Marcus Gallery is at 1308 North Oregon Street, and it's open Tuesday through Friday from noon to 5 and noon to 7 on Thursdays. The show is a collaboration between the Hal Marcus Gallery and the Vegetarian Society of El Paso.
If you'd like more information on a plant-based diet and other events hosted by the Vegetarian Society of El Paso, visit our website at vsep.org.
And if you'd like to listen to past shows of ACT Radio, you can find them at ktep.org. Just go to the Listen button. Until next time, I'm Greg Lawson.
And I'm Liz Walsh for the Animals, the Earth, and a Healthier Humanity. Thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.
Never asking.